Welcome. I'm going to do the first presentation, so I think everything is going to be in crescendo, but I'm going to present you a statistical path coverage. That this is a technique or a method that we started working on SIL2Linux MP project, led by Josadiel. That this was a project based on researching on Linux safety projects, and we started with a statistical path coverage there. It was very focused for safety-related systems, but we think it's interesting for all type of critical systems, not only safety ones. And it may be interesting for enhancing the testing strategy of these systems. So first of all, let's put it a little bit in context. The critical system that we are building today, we say the next generation critical system, but we are already building them, have or are running deep learning algorithms. We see right now with the break of AI. Also, they have...
Can you speak louder?
Okay. So louder?
Yeah, louder.
Okay. I'm going to start again then. So first of all, the context is that the critical system that we are building currently have different requirements. They are running deep learning algorithms, some of them. They also, security plays a key role in all this application, and they have high performance requirements. Different industries aspire to employ the commercial of the cells multi-core, the performance provided by the commercial of the cells multi-core processors, but this hardware was designed from an average maximum performance and not for critical systems. For example, if we check it for safety-related system, right now we don't have 35 multi-core hardware to use it. With all these points, in SIL2Linux MP, we saw that there was a need of an operating system to run complex algorithms with high performance requirements and also with security requirements. If we check the Linux kernel, I will say we can see that it's the king, I will say. It's the leading in non-critical domain. It's the leading operating system in embedded systems, in smartphones. It's almost the only solution in supercomputers, and it works also in the majority of web servers. There are different reasons for this, but the main one is because it has a wide hardware support. We have lots of drivers in the Linux kernel, and this provides all this support. It has really good or significantly better than others multi-core capabilities, and also security capabilities are important, and that's why different companies choose, or even governments choose Linux. Also large development ecosystems and wide developers community like here, right? So the question that arises here is, can we use Linux for critical systems? Right now we have thousands of Linux-based computers orbiting the Earth. So different companies and governments rely on Linux to build their satellites. We can find Linux even in space rockets, in control units of space rockets, and we can find Linux even in other planets, like in Mars. NASA deployed a small drone or a small helicopter based on Linux and a Snapdragon multicore. Also, different governments and companies rely in Linux for their telecommunications, critical servers, and for instance, banking systems, right? So can we use it for critical system? I would say that, yeah, we are already using it. How do we test the Linux for this? So here, when we started in SIL2Linux, we identified some problems. And it's that we know that testing and analysis of a critical system is crucial, and that we need to quantify this testing effort when we are doing testing. We need to know how much do we test. Traditionally, the objective of the testing process was to get 100% test coverage, but we are going to see that in the presentation, sometimes this is not possible, not feasible, and even not desirable. We don't need 100% test coverage. I'm going to put some definition from functional safety. It's only for functional safety, but I think it's interesting to have these ideas for all critical systems. And when we talk about functional safety, we are talking about systems with credible risk or freedom from unacceptable risk. sometimes we can hear from some people that safety is systems without any risk. And any developer in this room will say that their system has no bugs, right? So every system has some risk, but we need to achieve an acceptable risk. So therefore, in system safety, when we are doing engineering, processes, tools, the objective is to get this achievable risk. For that, we use testing and analysis, and testing helps us to fix bugs or mitigate them. Also, we understand better the system while we are doing this testing. And therefore, consequently, we need to quantify this testing effort, right? This testing process. We need to know how much do we know about the system and how or how tested is it. To quantify this testing effort, we always talk about test coverage. And there are different metrics for test coverage. We can find branch coverage, function coverage, land coverage. There are different types. For the SIL2 Linux MP project, as the objective was a SIL2, we focus on path coverage, but that's not an important point here. And the presentation goes about path coverage, but it's not the main idea. The important note here is that, for instance, in the 61508 standard, that we can consider that it is the general standard for safety systems, it notes where 100 coverage cannot be achieved, an appropriate explanation should be given. Okay? This is one point that we need to remember through the presentation. So let's try to get 100% test coverage, right? We take the Linux kernel, we start it like that, let's download the Linux kernel and check it. Linux kernel has over 27 million lines of code. So it's a huge project. It is true that from this almost 30 million lines of code, or maybe right now it's over 30, I don't know, half of it it's for drivers, it's for hardware. So we are not going to use all these 27 million lines of code, right? Also, our application is going to use only part of this kernel, only some features that we need for our application. So it's not going to exercise. It's also important to know that Linux is continuously evolving. We have already, this critical system needs to be updated. Traditionally, we have these systems, critical, and we didn't update it, but now it's going to be important to update this system for the security requirements. And this, we have a 6 patches per hour rate of update, and Linux is being developed every day in all the year, weekdays, weekends, every day. So what is going to be exercised in the Linux kernel from our critical application? Yesterday, like that, it was like, okay, just take a static code analysis and see what is going to be exercised. And we got this huge call graph, enormous call graphs, that were not usable for anything. You cannot deal with that. It's enormous. It makes no sense. And more, these call graphs only give partial results because they cannot solve some problems that are selected in runtime. They cannot solve indirect calls. They cannot solve aliases. They provide dead code also that it's not going to be used, and therefore it's not going to be tested, and they cannot solve assembly code. To this problem, we need to add another feature of the Linux kernel, that it's non-deterministic. Linux kernel is non-deterministic. This means that the same application with the same inputs may follow different execution paths. So traditionally, we have deterministic systems. This means that for the same input, always the function sequence that it was executed, it was always the same. And therefore, it was easier to test it. But right now, Linux kernel is non-deterministic. And this is due to the global state of the system. It will select which execution path to follow depending on the global state of the system. So, as example, if we do an application that is writing in DevNull, for instance, we write some string in DevNull, we have a really clean, easy, nice-looking execution trace like this. Very short done. Taking into account that the Linux kernel is designed or developed from performance point of view, perfect sense. But sometimes there will happen asynchronous events like RCU that we can find almost anywhere in the execution trace. So for the non-determinist, it's important to have into account that it's not possible to force the execution of a specific path because it doesn't rely only in the input. We cannot force the execution because depending on the input, there can be many execution paths. It relies on the state of the system. Right? And this state is not generally reproducible due to the complexity. There are enormous amount of asynchronous events and concurrency going on in hardware and software. So with all this, we identify the main issues we have during testing. We see that one iteration of a testing is not enough, and this is why many kernel developers struggle finding some bugs. They know that from time to time, a bug is happening, but they are not able to force the execution of that bug, and they once per week find it, and something is going on. Therefore, we need to execute all the tests repeatedly, and one conclusion is that we need continuous testing. Continuous testing is required. But the problem is that we don't know which traces can be executed, which execution path can be executed. So the question that arises here is, which traces need to be tested? How many traces do we need to test? And how do we quantify this testing effort? And that's why we start thinking on it and say, let's go to a statistical world. Let's use probabilities to do it. So we are going to show a statistical path coverage that is based on a statistical analysis to do test quantification and also to be able to estimate the residual risk in software. The approach is to base on probability and not only in possibilities. We are going to be focused on credible risk of our critical system and not all risk, because it makes no sense. We are going to focus on the credible risk of our system. And therefore, for doing that, we are going to record the behavior of our system. With this recording, we are going to get some data where we can provide some statistical analysis. And finally, we can quantify the testing as observation likeliness. Statistical path coverage, we can divide it in three phases. Collect data, model data, and risk estimation. For the phase one, data collection, we built a tool called DB4SIL2 that is based on dynamic data collection. That is F-Trace. F-Trace is well known in kernel developers. It's included in the Linux kernel, and it allows to record the execution that it's going on in the Linux kernel. And this tool is publicly available. It's in a repository in GitLab. So you can use it or you can test it if you want. And basically what it does, it has a client and a server. In the client, we have our critical system that it's recording what is going on. Once we have all these recordings, we send it to the server and we post-process them. In this post-processing, we identify the system calls right now. This is not complete, but as a prototype, it works well, because we consider system calls the entry point in the kernel. We do an analysis of independence within system calls, and we check that system calls are independent, and we calculate an MD5 hash of these execution traces. Why do we calculate a hash? Because this permits us to do analysis much easier. We can see how the sequences goes, the frequency of its system call. To calculate the statistical analysis later, it's much easier. So we deal with MD5. We are working also in a graphical interface unit for the tool to be much easier. This is not yet publicly available, but the idea is to have it, where we can show different data. In this data, we can show, for instance, the sequence diagrams, the execution sequence diagrams by system call. So we have the system call. In black lines, we find the common one, the one that I showed you before, for instance. And in red lines, it's around here, I don't know if the color is the best one, we identify the subpaths that have happened, and when they happen, with which frequency. Also, we are able to plot the histograms. So we see how many times each trace has been executing during the testing process. And we get an idea that normally, as Linux is developed from a performance point of view, the common trace is executed a lot of times, but we have some phases sometimes that there are some ray traces that are happening, and there are a huge amount of these ray traces. So once we have all this data, we can continue to phase two, that is modeling data. And for this data model, we choose to have a parametric approach. Why a parametric approach? Because if we get a model with a fixed set of parameters that describe the behavior of the system, we are able to extrapolate from the model we have. So if we get this model, we can extrapolate to say, OK, I get the behavior in 10,000 hours of testing. Let's go to infinite, right? So for these events, I'm not going to go deep in the statistics. If you want, you can ask me or send me an email. But we just choose low for rare events, that it's a Poisson distribution. But for that, we need to focus in the execution traces that happen rarely. To select these execution traces, the rare ones, we use entropy theory, that basically we divide the groups in two with the same amount of information, and we can focus on them. So here in the plot, we saw the number of traces that has appeared, the ray traces that has appeared during the testing process, and during the test cycles that we have managed, test cycles or test campaigns. And we see that while we are testing the system, the number of these ray traces goes, it's decreasing. It makes sense, right? Because we know more about our system. Therefore, if we are able to model, we get the model that it's going decreasing. And after we can extrapolate this model and think, okay, instead of 250 test campaigns or test cycles, if we go to infinite, how many traces would be up here? And just doing an improper integral, calculating the area, we can do this estimation. So in this use case that we have, that it was an autonomous emergency braking system, we got a test coverage of 85%. So 15% was not tested in 10,000 hours of testing process. Is this 15% an acceptable risk or not? That's the question, right? We have 85, but what does 85 mean in this case? We need to know if it is an acceptable risk or not. So for that, we need to estimate the risk. And if you remember, we were saying that when 100% coverage cannot be achieved, an appropriate explanation should be given. So let's calculate the risk as an explanation. And therefore, we can see if it is freedom from an acceptable risk or not. Risk can be calculated probability by severity. So let's go to the worst-case scenario where the severity is 1, because we consider that the execution of an untested trace, it's unacceptable, or it's catastrophic, right? We need to calculate the probability for that. And to calculate the probability of an event that didn't happen, we can use simple Guturin, that it's known in statistics, and we calculate that probability. So we know now which is the probability of executing one of unknown tests, right? And in hardware, it is common to find in different standards or in manuals, on data sheets, probability of failure per hour. But in software, it's not that common. There are some standards, but it's not, we software developers don't talk about that much, right? And I think that for these cases, it's interesting to have these ranges. So we can get these ranges and say, OK, is this acceptable or it is not acceptable? Furthermore, this probability can be improved. And this can be improved capitalizing on complexity of the systems. So if we know that the Linux kernel it's non-deterministic, we can use redundant architectures that are well known in critical system and safety system. And let's say, OK, execute the application same time in two containers, for instance. And the probability that two containers execute at the same time and untested traces, the probability will decrease. So we can reduce also this probability by using or capitalizing the non-determinism of the Linux kernel using redundant architectures. Instead of two channels, if we have three channels or four channels, this risk also will go decreasing. So just to end, some conclusions about the presentation and the method. We propose these statistical methods to estimate the number of traces that we are going to exercise and have relevant probability of being executed. We can estimate the execution probability of what we haven't tested, and therefore we can calculate also the residual risk of these untested traces. I will say that this can be a problem or also a possibility, and if we capitalize on complexity and we don't focus on all possible risks but incredible risk, in all possible paths but in path with a probability of being executed, we can shift to a probability world and capitalize on that. So it will be an opportunity and not only a problem. And we are open to other statistics. The idea was not to select a statistic which ones to use. The idea was to see if it is feasible to use a statistical world for this. And we think the objective was achieved. And we know that the technique is only possible if continuous monitoring is done, but I think for the next generation critical system, continuous monitoring would be mandatory anyway. And it will be great to have additional experts review or certification authorities review. As future land, we want to extend analysis not by system call, but we want to include all the calls that are in the Linux kernel. We know that this is limited. We want to publish the graphical interface in the public repository soon when it's working adequately. And also, we note, I said you, that these systems are going to be updating continuously, and we know that our statistic has some parameters that will detect if an update changes the behavior of the system. Right now, it's working correctly, but we need further analysis on this also. And this is like the next big step that we are doing in this statistical path coverage. And as this is an in-context technique that depends on the use case, it's great to have a different use case to be analyzed and being continuous monitoring to do it. So thank you very much. If anyone has any question, you can ask it right now, or you can send me an email if you want.
I would like to ask a question about the unique traces in the experiment as a whole. Where are you updating the kernel version or user space during these 10,000 hours?
No, in these 10,000 hours it was...
Repeat the question.
What?
Repeat the question.
Okay. So he asked if in the results if we saw that if the system was being updated, and it was not, it was a static kernel, that it was not being updated. So the update part, it's being tested right now. We are dealing with that. So all these statistical models have some parameters that will detect if a change in the behavior of the system happens. But right now, in these results, it was not. Okay, thank you. All clear? Okay, great.
One question. Do you have a target of the reduction of the number of tests or power of tests when you start the tool? Do you expect that to say 20%, for example?
No, the about the percentage of the test coverage, no. About the residual risk, that's why I talk about probability per failure per hour. There are some in hardware, well known. And 6508, that it's the generic standards, show some values. And we did this comparison with these values. And with using redundant architecture, we can achieve them in this case. But there is no well-known range right now selected. Yep.
Do you have any metrics to find out whether or not that is enough? Do you get any results on that? Do
you
have
any can you repeat it, please?
Do you have any anecdotes of whether or not 85% is a good number for tests in the Linux kernel, or if it is enough in use cases where you use it?
Okay, so tradition, if you go to a tradition, so he asked if the 80% test coverage, is it enough or not? And so traditionally, one will say that if you have not 100%, it's not enough. I say that that's why we do the risk estimation, and that's the important thing. The test coverage, it can give you some feelings of if it is enough or not. But the important thing is the risk. So I can say that it's 99%, but if this 1% is catastrophic, 99% it's not enough. If this 15% it's non-catastrophic, it's enough. So it's not about getting the number, and this happened to every developer. When you are testing, the objective of testing is to fix it and not to get the 100%, right? But sometimes you are doing the test and you need to be objective on that. You are doing the test to get the number, and that doesn't make sense, right? It's not about getting the number, it's making the system safe.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah? Okay, so he is asking about continuous monitoring. So continuous monitoring here should be, I think, decided in context of the use case. We need to doubt that because the test will be designed depending on the use case. But like in real-time Linux, they are using continuous monitoring to see how it's real-time Linux working on. For that, we also will need to do that for these systems. And before, for instance, doing an update to the critical system that it's in the road or in the street or in an industry, we need to do this continuous monitoring in our labs. So that's why we need these systems running in our labs, being tested continuously and checking all these updates. It's gonna be okay or not okay. That's it?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much.